There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? And so it must come to a close. Our festive, holiday-specific series, I Want to Watch Your Film, where we took a look at offbeat vampire movies, is over. We've seen really pretty British vampires, African king vampires, 80s teen vampires, slinky rock god vampires, German vampires, Western white trash vampires, overacting vampires, and now, to finish this whole thing off, we have Italian space vampires. Planet of the Vampires is the name of this week's film, and it's definitely got the word vampire in its title. It might just be the offbeatiest vampire movie of them all. Or would they? Hosting this cinematic vessel is that man about bats, Max, suck on this, Levine. Give us a bite, Max.
Flap, 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 flap.
No, see, because I'm just that wing-flapping sidekick.
Oh.
Mike, I never drink wine. Loose. As a side note, with this episode, you can now listen to a different show every day for a full year at no extra cost, because this is episode 365. Of course, that doesn't include these specials and one-offs and 365!
We do it because we care.
About something. But how about that? Free!
Yay!
This promises to be quite a show, and what better way to start it off than with your answers to the
poll question.
We were just dying to know which aspect of vampire lore you thought most stupid or unbelievable.
Please tell us! Tell us!
They're about to. What you said was these. Vince, whose name begins with a V, does that mean he might be a vampire?
We've been tricked!
Dunno, he's from Canada. He answered, quote, in Stoker's novel, Dracula can change his size. Oh, can't we all? Oh,
wait,
sorry,
what?
That was dirty. Ooh, he can grow large or shrink to a tiny speck.
Shame on you.
He doesn't seem to do any of this, but he can, or so he says. Having studied vampire legends and folklore for most of my life, I have found lore saying that they can do almost anything, but I have yet to see a vampire in a film get tiny to walk under a door or grow to a giant for some reason. Come on, vampires, use it or lose it, end quote.
Seriously, what?
I don't know, but giant vampires.
I didn't remember that, but I still think that was just Dracula, you know, bragging. Yeah, I can get really big, if you know what I mean.
That's what she said. Anyway, never seen giant vampires. Thanks, Vince. Speeding over to Facebook, we have noted author Tony Kellner, who answered, quote, mirrors and crossing running water. The mirrors I can attach to silver, older mirrors use silver, but the running water never made sense to me, end quote. Silver. I always thought that was for werewolves, but thanks, Tony.
No, I think the mirror thing was, the idea was the mirror reflected your soul, and vampires don't have souls.
Depends on the lighting.
I guess.
Gee, my soul looks tired today.
Oh, man. Hey, my soul's on the wrong side of my face. Evil!
Yeah. Sent us, quote, vampires are generally dumb. I will sit this one out and polish my skin so that it sparkles properly. Have you seen my new golden eyes? A gentleman from Transylvania gave them to me. End quote.
Oh, dear.
What does that mean? I don't know that.
Part of the Twilight vampires, their eyes turn yellow, but there's also...
That was brown.
There's at least one vampire movie. I think it might be... nope, can't remember. But there are ones where their eyes like turn gold like a lion's.
Oh, well, sure. Mm-hmm. But he thinks just generally dumb. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Keith Wright offered, quote, what about the garlic thing? Do all vampires have IBS? The holy water thing makes more sense, end quote. Yes, magical, spiritual IBS. That's totally it.
No, keep away. I will have to find the outhouse.
Oh, it's a full moon. It's dark out. Do you hear something? I think it's vampires flying up above. Oh, they're going south for the winter. Dan Schaefer wrote, quote, the running water thing always struck me as silly. Oh, that ancient immortal who can take the form of a wolf or bat is chasing you through the forest? Just hop over this creek and you're safe. Also, the whole they can't come in if you don't invite them in thing seems more about being scared of strangers in general than a supernatural limitation, end quote. The running water gag makes another appearance on our list. Thanks, Dan.
Yep.
Matt Reisman stated, quote, counting... pun intended. The idea that if you throw some grain on the ground, the vampire will be compelled to stop and count it. Gee, I thought that was Rayman, but from Rayman.
That is actually a thing. Apparently, vampirism also causes OCD.
Okay. He continues, it's silly enough that I guess you could argue that it's traditional but not standard, except Jim Henson keeps it in the zeitgeist, end quote. I did not know that one. Thanks, Matt. Yes.
1, 2, 3 victims.
Byron Ho said simply, quote, being invited in, end quote. I actually like that one, but seems I'm in the minority. Thanks, Byron. Mm-hmm. Oh, seems we got an answer on our hotline, but it doesn't smell like Doris.
What?
I wonder who this is.
Aha, you still don't know who I am, but I do admire your show. Vampires are dumb. The two things that bother me most about vampires are, one, their compulsive counting. All you have to do is drop a bag of rice or some kind of seeds in front of them, and then rather than sucking your blood, it will pause for almost an eternity counting every single grain you've dropped. That's why Sesame Street is actually the most lore-accurate vampire ever presented in media. The other one I don't like is the invitation rule. They can't enter your house unless you invite them in. That is dumb. Dumb. Dumb!
Who could that be? Sarge? I know. Rosemary, the telephone operator? No.
Henry the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be.
It's our mystery fan again. I wonder who he could be. Seems the counting thing and the invitation thing are coming up on the outside. Thanks, mystery date. And so, wait a minute. I know that blink, that little twinkling red light.
My little child of the night.
Your little favorite cinnamon bun, Doris.
My little vampire puffin.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. Happy New Year. This is Doris Impelmeyer here to answer your poll question for the week, which just happens to be, what part, if any, of standard vampire lore strikes you as particularly silly, odd, or dumb? Well, the one that always got me, because it just seems like it's just kind of a crazy weakness to have, is that whole sunlight thing. Have you ever seen in the sunlight? Well, if somebody figures this out, they're just going to drag your box out and they'll take the top off and you're done. I mean, come on. This is kind of crazy. And going with that, I mean, to a lesser extent, your whole Mother Earth or home country Earth thing that you put in the bottom of the thing. Like, I can take that away and substitute something else. That's not hard. Anyway, those are my two answers. I hope you have a wonderful week. I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Well, that's a first for the list. Hear that, vampires? Doris thinks you should be able to walk around in the daytime. Thanks, Doris.
Okay, that kind of goes against the whole thing. But, you know, whatever Doris wants, Doris gets.
Isn't that a song?
No, that's Lola.
Oh. Eh, close enough. But what about you, Max? What vampiric bit of flim-flammery always got your goat?
The thing with the running water, I gotta chime in on that. And I can guess why that's there, along with the garlic. I can picture, like, some old Carpathian grandmother scaring the crap out of her grandchildren with the stories of the vampires, and they're trying to go home, and, Mom, we're gonna get eaten by vampires! Like, no, it's all right, darling. See, we live near a stream, and they can't cross running water, everyone knows. Really? Yes, honey. And you know the garlic crop we have? Vampires hate garlic. Oh, okay. I think this was just a way for the peasants to go, well, this is why we're not all dead, so there are these weird-ass rules they have to follow.
Snakes, as you know, live in a mortal field of, Tile.
Yes, exactly.
It's all right, Miss Burns. You can come out now.
What more can they do to me?
Now, see, I could actually see it being the opposite, meaning that they lived near a stream, so the old Carpathian grandma used that as a way to keep the kids from going too far out.
Oh, like, okay. That's a good
one, too. Don't cross the stream, because that's the only thing that keeps the vampires away.
You said crossing the streams was bad.
As my sister knows, telling your younger brother that garlic keeps vampires away is not necessarily a good idea, because he may then take garlic powder and sprinkle it over all the windowsills.
Oh, dear.
True story.
Who at least would it do that?
My sister did this, and I think there had been a vampire movie on, and luckily it was summer because the windows were open. However, it was wafting the garlic all through the house.
Oh, boy.
Needless to say, when my mom came home, she wondered just what the heck had been going on.
How have you guys been cooking a lot of Italian food? What is this? And what about you, Mike? What's the one thing in vamp or a thing in vampire lore that you just say, huh, to?
I don't like them turning into stuff. I don't really see the whole, because, all right, I can stretch the whole drinking the blood of the living keeps them, quote unquote, ambulatory, they're not alive, but keeps them going. But being able to turn into things, I think that's a bit too much, because you never, it's like, well, what can't they turn? Sometimes they turn into rats or bats or dogs or wolves.
Fog,
or apparently big or small or whatever. I mean, you know, I just think that's too much. Too many superpowers. Hmm. And quite honestly, I think vampires would be more effective if you just limited to the one thing. Whatever that one thing is, that's what the vampire can do. Hmm. I don't think sparkle should be on there.
No.
I don't think being able to say, remarkable. is one either. So yeah, that's my vote.
No vampire.
But thanks again for all the swell answers. We love to get them.
We do.
So keep on answering.
Yes.
This week, we'd like to know, what is your favorite cinematic plot twist? What unseen element just leapt out of nowhere and smacked you in the face? Let us know and we'll quote you here on the show. But for now, let's get back to Planet of the Vampires and
the facts.
Budget. Yes, it had one. $200,000 and all in Italian money.
Oh, so 200,000 lira or $11.
No, it was $200,000.
Okay.
And we'll get to the reason why that was true. However, this was actually tough. When I went to go look this up, they listed it in the currency in the country in which it made money. And so I had to go and take that amount of money, plug it into a calculator for dollars at 1965.
Okay.
So in the States, it made $250,000. In Spain, for some reason, it made $636,000.
Whoa.
And in Italy, it raked in a cool $145,000 for a grand total of 1.31 million buckaroos.
Good Lord. So it made money.
Yeah. It was pretty successful.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. The distributor of this movie, American International Pictures, a longtime favorite of Max Mike Movies.
Oh, yes.
Had done very well bringing over a bunch of other Italian films, such as Black Sunday and Black Sabbath, both made by this film's director, Mario Bava. Never mind the scads of Hercules and other fantasy films. They did so well, they thought they'd actually get into the production of them instead of just distributing them, so they could have more say in the making thereof. This was one of those movies, which is why it was not just lira. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Ib Melchior, a screenwriter who had given us such classics as Angry Red Planet, Reptilicus, your entire episode on Reptilicus, and Robinson Crusoe on Mars, was hired to help with this movie. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, Ib Melchior still sounds like one of, you know, Lovecraft's gods.
Ib Melchior.
Ib Melchior.
We will cleanse the world with fire. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Though it's not at all obvious, this movie's cast was very international. There were actors from the States, Brazil, Italy, and Spain. To add to the fun, each actor spoke their lines in their native tongue, which meant that most of the time, each of the actors did not know what the other actors were saying.
That explains a lot of the facial expressions.
Or lack thereof, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the film's special effects were done in camera, meaning there were no double exposures, blue screens, or the like. Often mirrors, forced perspective, and copious amounts of fog were used to visually stitch the various elements of model, actor, and set together. According to the director, quote, "Do you know what that unknown planet was made of? A couple of plastic rocks. Yes, two, one and one. Left over from a mythological movie made at Cinecittà. To assist the illusion, I filled the set with smoke." Because that's how he sounded. End quote. He actually said that. Two.
Perfect.
Two. One, one, two. As much as was spent on this movie, or not spent on this movie, when released, it was part of a double feature playing after the famous classic horror film we all know and love, Die Monster Die.
Oh, I thought that was a German film, you know. Die Monster.
No.
The Monster. The.
That's why it's not German. You would not say that.
Okay.
Apparently Max would say that, but
I would say that many times and have.
Interestingly, this movie has actually done pretty well by the critics, and many people consider it very influential. For example, you're giving it away, Max. For example, the general shape of the spaceships in here, the giant alien skeletons, and the overall feeling of horror are considered to have directly influenced 1979's Alien. Initially, director Ridley Scott and screenwriter Dan O'Bannon denied this, stating that they had never seen this movie. Later on, though, O'Bannon admitted, quote, "I stole the giant skeleton from Planet of the Vampires," end quote. So there you go.
Okay. All right. At least he admitted.
Oh, but that's not where the influence stops. No? 2000's Pitch Black and Mission to Mars are said to have been directly influenced by this movie as well. Even 2023's Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom supposedly picked up cues from Planet of the Vampires.
I'm still not watching it.
I'm not watching it either. This movie visually predicts the document scanner.
Such I noticed that.
Yeah.
It's 1965 and someone's using a flatbed scanner.
Yeah, and then taking paper and putting it in a cabinet, but yeah, whatever. science!
Yeah, science.
In the technology. Future, we shall have better ways to store paper. Okay.
Yes.
There's Vision. Anyway, as stated, the voices in this film were originally in many different languages. When released in the States, every actor had to be speaking English, so those that weren't were dubbed. And who were two of those voiceover actors? Why, Peter Fernandez and Jack Curtis, better known as the voices of Speed Racer and Inspector Detector.
Whenever the character Wes starts talking, I was like, I know that voice.
Yeah.
And I looked him up, and it's like, oh, God, it's Speed Racer. I don't believe this.
Well, in the other one, there was Inspector Detective. Yeah. He was one of the ones on the...
Yep.
I was happy because I was like, I know Jack Curtis's voice. And Peter Fernandez was doing his voice a little lower pitched than he did Speed. Mm-hmm. But luckily, if you go to the top cast, scroll, and go to the very bottom, they have the voice actors, and there they were, and I know their names. So, Peter Fernandez, Jack Curtis, Jack Grimes, and Corrine Orr are the core people that did not only Speed Racer, but you often hear them in a number of Godzilla films as well. So, apparently, that group of actors was just dubbing crap all through the 60s. And honestly, that's a lot more trivia than I thought was going to find on this movie. So, unless Max has some more, we can get to the plot. No.
The only thing I had was Peter Fernandez. I didn't know about Jack Curtis. I missed that one, but I did recognize Peter Fernandez.
Well, initially, he has it like in the opening of the film, he has a bigger part, and he doesn't disguise his voice. He's just Inspector Detectoring all over the place. But the plot. It's the future. It's space. Two spaceships, the Argos and the Galliot, have been sent from somewhere to respond to a distress signal broadcast from a mysterious planet. The Galliot lands first, but when it does, its crew goes mad and starts killing each other. The Argos crew can't raise them, but is suddenly caught in an unknown something that's pulling them down to the surface with a force of over 40 Gs. Our crew lands safely, somehow, and they too start going nuts and trying to kill each other. What could this mean? Slapping each other back into a semblance of sanity, they gather together to go out looking for the Galliot. What they find is a ship that's been torn apart from the inside and a crew that's mostly littered about, dead. Only two members are still alive. Taking care of the dead, the remaining crew head back to the Argos, only to find out that the two surviving Galliot crew members are not who they seem to be. A formless, invisible alien race has taken over their bodies. You might even say they have sucked their souls out just like a vampire would. Go with me.
What?
They are trying to prevent the Argos from leaving, at least not before the rest of the surviving aliens can take over what's left of the Argos crew. It was they that set up the distress call and nearly died out waiting for a response. But now they have the means. In a desperate rush, the remaining Argos crew grab what equipment they can and flee to their ship, blasting off just in time. After all that violence and, space vampirism. There's only three people left of the original 18. But at least they'll be safe as they head home. Except wait! Two of them are not Argos crew. They have been taken over by the space vampires. The last human manages to damage their meteor screen, leaving the Argos open to destructive space rubble. Seems the vampires will just have to make a stopover on this little planet they're flying by. A planet called Earth.
The film.
So, Max, first off, I want to thank Vince. Vince, in the last minute, brought this up in an answer to a poll question a couple weeks ago. I'd never heard of it, or if
thanks
I had,
thanks a lot, Vince.
Uh-oh, Max is giving things away again. So, this film was sort of chosen by one of our listeners, so thank you, Vince. But, had you heard of this before?
I don't think so. Maybe I saw the name in, like, lists of science fiction movies or Italian science fiction movies, but I knew nothing about it. I'd never seen it or come across it in a creature double feature or anything.
Of course, I have to wonder why you are wandering through lists of Italian science fiction movies.
Doesn't
Do you
everyone?
Hate yourself? Are you just down today?
No.
How best to punish myself today? I know I shall go through a list of Italian science fiction
films. I'm feeling too good about life. I'm going to look through this list of bad Italian science fiction movies.
Which is probably unfair. There's probably some good ones. And this might be one of them. We haven't got to that part of the show yet. But all right, so here's a problem.
Did you know this movie?
No. I mean, Vince might have mentioned it to me in passing over the years. I think I saw a picture of the spacesuits, which we'll get back to, and thought, that's interesting. But no, I've never seen it. So this is a first time for both of us, which I actually think is a great way to end the series. Yeah, a vampire film neither of us has seen. Mm-hmm. And yes, we'll get to the vampire part later.
Yeah.
The first part, though, we're going to have a problem with. We talk about the actors. So for one thing, everybody's dubbed except for a couple of the Americans in here. And the dubbing is adequate. I mean, you can understand what they're saying.
You can. All the words are in focus.
But imagine the stumbling block of being an actor on this film where it's like, hey, all right, so you, and actually I have to go back to Nick Adams in a Godzilla film, one of my favorites, Monster Zero, the only guy in the entire film speaking English. It's like, how do you know what's going on? Maybe he spoke Japanese. I don't know. But here's a whole bunch of people, a whole passel of people that probably can't understand what they're saying. They just know at this point you say your line as emotive as you can.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the actors, I guess?
Well, kind of. Okay. I mean,
I'm going to guess Barry Sullivan's one of the Americans. He seems very
I think so.
Barry Sullivan-ish.
He is. He's very kind of generic looking. I do want to point out, by the way, yes, Captain Salas, who we see only a couple of times, is played by Massimo Raihi. People have seen him before. I will give you a hint. Ba-ba-da-ba-da-da.
Oh, is he? Oh, he wasn't the main guy in Danger
Death
Row, was he?
He was the Al, the guy who goes from enemy to ally at the end.
Oh, God, the blonde guy.
Yes, yeah, he was in Danger Death Ray.
The guy who was originally helping out Abraham Lincoln Time Cop.
Yep, pretty much.
We do this all the time, folks. We quote from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Honestly, if you've never watched MST3K or you haven't watched it in a while, hunt up the episode Danger Death Ray. It is a delightful Italian spy movie that makes literally no sense.
None.
And honestly, probably has about the same budget as this film.
And they do a good job with it.
They do a great job with it. It's one of my favorites. Okay, I did not I don't know why I didn't recognize him, but I didn't. So thank you for bringing that to my attention.
He's very generic looking, I'm sorry. Most of the others, I don't know what there is to say.
Yeah.
Just sort of they're there.
Yeah. I mean, we have Norma Bengel and Evie Morandi who play the women. I know they have names, but let's face it, they're the women.
Yes, one of them was Tiona, who had a crippling fear of fog, apparently, because every time the fog rolls in, she starts screaming.
Yeah.
We don't know why. She just does.
It's the terror of space vampires.
I guess.
I say the women because they are treated like your stereotypical Italian bombshell character, i.e. they don't seem to have any qualifications. They don't have anything much to do except scream, point, and faint. So, whatever.
They stand there looking good in the jumpsuit. That's about it.
Well, we'll get back to the costumes.
Oh, yeah. We got to get to the costumes. But
And we got Angela Ronda, who plays Wes, who is the guy, basically the guy who
Speed
lasts.
Racer.
he lasts the longest.
Yeah.
He's an earnest young engineer, I guess. I mean, we don't even know what any of these people do.
Eager young space cadet. Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. And then there's Bert and Q. here and Brad and Toby Ernie. And Eldon and there's some
I
can't even say Italian. Some of them are Italian. Some of them are from Brazil. Why? I don't know. How would we know? Why would we care? Like, what was the point of that? I don't know. But if you've seen a 60s science fiction film, especially one from Europe, this is what they feel like. They feel exactly like that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of walking around.
Yeah.
A lot of vaguely futuristic tech and a lot of anachronistic, very old techs existing side by side.
So my note on that was, remember when science was nonspecific?
Yeah.
Like, this is this is almost Star Trek territory. It's 65, so it's the year before the actual show comes out on the air. But this is when design was more important than functionality. We need things to look good. Cool. And in a way, it does.
Some of it does. The planet set actually looks kind of intriguing.
Well, both rocks are actually doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Apparently what they would do is they would have the rocks and then they would switch the places of the rocks or they would shoot it in the mirror so that it was like...
Considering there are only two pieces, that's actually kind of impressive because I didn't think that when I was watching it.
Well,
I did think the first shot we get, the interior of the spaceship...
Oh no, the first shot is the exterior of the spaceship. True. That was the problem.
That was a problem, but I'm looking at the interior and all I can think of is like, where are Brack and Exeter? Because this looks exactly like the interior of the spaceship from this island Earth.
It kind of does. I will say this, two
things. It's just a big, empty room.
Well, on one hand, it's a big set, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like it's this tiny little closet. It's a big... The big problem is the first glimpse we get of this, like the bridge, I don't know what it is. In the foreground, you're like, you ran out of flooring. There's floorboards here.
Yeah. And you notice when there's a fight scene at some point and they bump into one of the consoles and the console slides across the floor, very clearly not anchored to anything.
Yeah, there's also some times when some of the local flora isn't exactly bolted down, shall we say. There's a bit of shaking and stuff. But I do have to say, and this is something the Italians are known for, the design in this film is actually really cool and very singular. Yes, the spacesuits are stupid.
They have these collars that go up to their, I don't know, the brow ridge on the side that not only cut off your peripheral vision, but I honestly thought if you turn your head suddenly, you'll shave your own face off.
Or you'll take an eye out. Yeah. I love the fact that at one point, I think it's Wes, I'm not positive because there's 18 characters in this film. At one point, obviously Wes has just had enough and he takes his collar and he rips it off and throws it away.
It's like, good for you.
I do love the fact, though, that as weird as these jumpsuits are, and they seem to be, and I feel so bad for these actors, they seem to be made of leather, black leather.
Or vinyl or something.
Yeah, but they are like literally neck to foot. They must have been sweating their nads off. At some point in the film, it's obvious that somebody either said, look, if you want us to continue to be in this film, we need other costumes. Either that or in-universe. They're like, well, we have our day uniforms and our night uniforms because they get a totally different jumpsuit halfway through the film.
Suddenly they're wearing peach color.
And it actually looked a lot more comfortable. So.
It really, really did.
But that's expensive stuff. Like, I know they obviously, I hate to say this, they probably didn't spend any of the budget on the actors because.
No.
I'm sorry, if your other credit is Danger Death Ray, it wouldn't exactly look to hire you off IMDb.
Yeah.
So I think that the design is very singular, and I didn't think about it till I read the trivia, but the weird shape of their ships does remind me of the alien crashed vessel in Alien, that sort of horseshoe shape.
And the giant skeletons. I mean, when they find the derelict ship, the design of that, the way the doors open, and the interior is actually kind of cool, and it's distinctive.
Yeah.
And the tech is interesting. Like, at one point they find a giant tuning fork, and I thought, oh, that's cool, the doors are activated by sound. Well, no, they're not, but that would have been cool, and obviously it's for something else.
Yeah.
My favorite is still, you know what you have to open the door with? This joy buzzer. Because at one point, Sonya, woman number one, I'm sorry, that's who she is. There's woman number one and woman number two. She, finds this miniature version of Simon on the ground and touches and tries to touch it and it shocks her and immediately Captain Mark goes over, oh, what's this? Psst, ow! Oh, it really does shock. And apparently you have to pick that up, take the electrical shock through your body and hold it against the door. So
I mean, To be fair, this kind of scientific exploration would continue through the 60s. Literally, the first broadcast episode of Star Trek has a crew member going, huh, wonder what this planet is. I think I'll eat it. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I will say, too, you said woman number one. I got to say, at least the women have different hair color, because there are all of these guys with short, dark brown hair. And the only part of them you see is their face. And it becomes very hard to tell them apart.
Especially when they start wearing the head coverings.
Yeah. Well, they have this, because the one thing that that suit needed was a helmet.
Yeah.
Man, I can just see that the directors is in the, and now you need to put on the helmet. And I can see the actors going, the what? We have to do what? You want us to do what? 50,000 lira. All right, $5 is $5. I said that the spacesuits are made of rich Corinthian leather.
Not on that budget. I think they're made of rich Corinthian pleather.
Did you ever see the, it was a point not long after those commercials came out, that they had Ricardo Montalban on The Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson asked him, what is rich Corinthian leather? And Ricardo Montalban, without missing a beat, saying, it's nothing. It doesn't mean anything.
Good for him.
Yeah.
The techno babble they have. I mean, never mind the script, but the techno babble.
Oh,
did you catch that? Nearly in the beginning when they're saying how long it'll take to touch down, it'll be in 60 fractions of a megon. And in my notes, I have, how much is that in centons? Or calicams?
Oh, Felger carb. Yes. It's actually a subtle clue that I didn't even think about till you just said it, because we assume that they're humans. It turns out they ain't. That's the first twist in the film. There's actually three twists in the film. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to that later. So, and then they're talking about they're suffering under 40 Gs. Unless their planet is a heck of a lot less G than our planet, my answer to that is no.
They would have been a thin film of protein on the floor.
Do you know how a tube of toothpaste works? Because it works kind of like this.
Yeah. Welcome to Planet Pancakeus.
Yeah, but I appreciated the sense of design. They didn't take any, like, if you watch an American science fiction film, the spacesuits they use in one film will show up in another and another and another. They don't if they reused anything, obviously reused the rocks. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Apparently at one point, Hercules tripped over one of these plastic rocks. I don't know. But I really do appreciate them trying to do something at least visually different. And that does not happen often. Now, that being said, the special effects, they're
not very special.
No. And the first shot, I kept waiting. Is this a commercial for an AMT model kit? What are we looking at here? Because when you take a close-up shot of a not very well-made model, what it looks like is a not very well-made model.
Special effects by Billy.
Yeah. Also from Danger Death Ray.
Yep.
So, I also kind of miss, I mean, I like the design of the original bridge on the Enterprise. In some ways, it's very functional and it makes a lot of sense. It's just when you look at the control panels, nothing is labeled, nothing, like, it's spread out. I mean, to be fair, in the background, all the panels are in sort of an arc, which makes sense. That means that all the buttons are equally distant from you. They're not laid out and bunched together like a keyboard. We just don't know what they do, which is okay, because the actors didn't know what they did either. I kind of don't mind that, and I kind of miss that little, I don't know if it's a sense of wonder or that touch of fantasy in science fiction.
The idea that this isn't science, it's magic.
Well, not necessarily that. It's just like it's so far advanced of what we are, which is what it should be, that we don't understand it. To them, it makes perfect sense. I think Next Gen probably melded those two things the best together. They're like, we have these touch panels, and hey, actors, just so you know, it actually does something. So you need to learn how to use these so that it, you know, it makes sense. So, but I think that the design in this is remarkable.
Stop it.
I will have to say, though, we have this title, Count of the Vampires. I checked, third of the way in, where's the vampires?
In fact, where are the vampires ever?
Do you want to get to that part? It's a little early.
I mean, the title of this was Terror in Space, which makes a lot more sense.
Me.
It was also called The Demon Planet.
One of the titles.
Yeah,
it had a number of titles.
It
always
had
a good
bunch.
Sign.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that this film is in any way vampiric.
There are certain elements, the mind control things, the, and I use this term loosely, subtle control they use over people, and the idea that they are parasites.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, but otherwise in traditional terms, no! There's no blood drinking. There's no children of the night.
Yeah.
These are more, I mean, the closest you get are kind of zombies.
And I think Planet of the Zombies was in there up for grabs, too. They didn't actually use it, but...
Yeah.
I want to say that you could make an argument that they were sucking the souls out of people in a non-fangish, but yet still vaguely vampiric way. And to be fair, we find out later, these aren't humans. So, in a way, the rules don't apply.
I mean, that was kind of an interesting touch in that, like, yeah, we're... You know, our planet's dying. We want to get the hell out of here, and we'll do anything we can to for the survival of our race. You'd do the same thing.
Yeah. Which, and again, I didn't pick up on this when I was watching, that isn't entirely unlike the plot of Alien, except we never... Prometheus, grumble, grumble, grr, grr, cuss, cuss. We don't know what the point of the xenomorphs are. There's a suggestion that they were made...
There's a suggestion they were bioweapons, basically.
Yeah, maybe, whatever. Except that then the guy in the white underwear tosses the black stuff into the lake on Earth, and eventually it's not Earth, or it is, or we don't. Blue meanies. I don't care. I mean, we go through the film assuming these people are human, because they're wearing, you know, Italian wigs. And
they
know.
Look human.
Yes.
They've got eyes and nose and face and such.
I mean, here, what do vampires do? If you're just feeding, you eat your prey, and that's it, they die. But you also occasionally make new vampires. And when you do that, you add to your flock, your group,
your D&D party,
I don't know. But you do take over what their personality and what their quote-unquote soul was, or damn their soul, into something at least new, if not entirely different. I'm stretching things as far as the silly putty or the Stretch Armstrong will go before it breaks.
Yeah.
But I can kind of see it.
Well,
and in a way, it's more terrifying because there doesn't seem to be any way to fight this.
Yeah, especially because the rules they set out at one point appear not to be true.
Which are?
They say at one point, oh yeah, we can only possess the bodies of the dead unless... You allow us to possess you.
Right.
And at the end, it turns out, spoiler, they have possessed Captain Marky Mark and Sanya.
Sanka.
We have no... Why would... this never has a second first officer at home. We never know... Why would they accept them? Why would they allow them to take them over?
I mean, the other possibility is that they died just not in obvious ways. There's one point where we find out that... whatever his name is, the blonde guy, is actually dead because the front of his leather jumpsuit opens and he has a plastic zombie chest piece from Halloween Town glued to him.
Yeah, that was supposed to be grotesque and terrifying.
So there might have been something where they were subdued and gassed or something. We don't know.
We don't know.
My guess is that if you allow them in, then... there might be some semblance of yourself, but you're not in control. They're not very specific about this.
Well, that's another vampire thing. If you know, they can't come in unless you invite them. Usually that means house, but...
Well, because they show up on the galley at all on their own.
Yeah, but I'm saying into the body. They would have to invite them into your body.
Well, except that...
Maybe.
Well, because that's what happens in the beginning. They go under the galley at crew and then try to make them start killing each other. Maybe it's you've got a certain amount of control up to a point. Like, if you catch them unawares, you can...
And if no one does something like, slap them.
But...
Yeah, apparently, by the way... Punching someone does not break the spell. Slapping them does.
Well, you're not going to show them punching a woman in the 60s. We'll have to wait till the 80s for that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, sure.
I honestly think that you and I have now spent four times as much time thinking about and figuring this out and trying to make sense of this than they did.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's likely that they were just out to make a sci-fi horror film, which... To be fair, there was, at this point, only a handful. Some of them quite effective, like The Thing from Another World.
I don't know. There were a lot in the 50s, that were supposed... Well, they were science fiction, and they were supposed to be horror films. Like Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Now, wait. Let's put the record straight. The Attack of the Eye Creatures was a remake of Invasion of the Saucer Men.
But again, science fiction horror.
Yeah, I think some of them are a little bit more just monster than they are horror, though. I think
What's the distinction?
Well, I think there's meant to be more tension and more creepiness in this than there was in, well, I mean, let's face it. The idea of the word tension entering into the set anywhere on Attack of the Eye Creatures is hilarious, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea here is like you're, with a monster, you're facing something you can see. This is something that gets into you. And I think that that's the horror aspect. But also there's meant to be more atmospheric creepiness than there usually is in some of those films. The Thing from Another World, perfect example. We don't even know what it is and people are dying. And then, of course, when they remake it, quite honestly, way better. It's we don't know which of us is the monster, which is even better.
Even before this, you had Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's another one that I would put in that.
Way more creepy. Yeah.
Really creepy, especially with the original ending, which was we're screwed.
You're next.
Yeah. But I think a lot of times science fiction films were just literally us against the spaceman, us against the monster. It wasn't as much horror. This feels to be more that it's in that horror genre, or it would like to be.
Interesting.
That's just, you know. I do have a quick question for you. One of the characters, one of the guys, his name's Dr. Karen.
Yes. Yeah, and he should have like a blonde bob haircut and ask to speak to the alien's manager, but...
I know, but every time they didn't even say doctor, it was like, Karen, what do you think? And then this guy would lumber in, it's like, well, gee, I don't know. And it's like, Karen, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Name was,
I know,
kind
it's
of
spelled
awkward.
Different, but I...
And some of the stuff, like, oh, I guess it's Captain, you know, Captain Danger Death Ray says, you cannot defeat me with violence. Pow! Oh, look, they defeated it with violence.
Well, and I have another question. They are carrying around these really cool laser beam gun rifle things through most of the film, and they never shoot them.
They do a couple of times. At Toward the end, they finally use them. Otherwise, they're just hitting each other.
Well,
all I can figure is that effect must have been too expensive to use more than a couple of times.
Probably. But there's this big fight scene at the end. I don't know if you heard it, but as soon as the big fight scene started, I started hearing...
Yes, I definitely heard that.
But they're holding their guns or they're hitting them.
Yeah, they're using them as clubs.
Will you please shoot the damn thing?
You're doing it wrong.
What happens when they shoot the gun? It's effective. Who would have thought? I have to say there's points where they're walking between ships because, like Devil Girl from Mars, we can't park near where we need to go.
No, lot of walking.
And there's some scenes where especially Sanya, Sanka, nearly slips and falls into what appears to be an evil mud bog.
Which the mud bog, though, the way they shoot it, it looks like it's about 6 inches across.
I almost got my boots wet.
Yes, okay. It's like you might land on it and maybe get your butt dirty, but that's about it.
Yeah. You know.
Not a lot of tension there. I kind of like the other hint, as you pointed out, I hadn't thought of it this way, that these aren't human is the grave markers. Because the first time, you know, they bury a bunch of the people. And they put up these weird-looking metal modern sculptures, posts, obelisks, whatever. And the first time I see them, I'm going, what the hell are those? Because we never see them putting them up. And eventually you realize, oh, those are grave markers.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought, oh, wow, that's not the way humans do it. Because it's not like there's any shortage of rock on that planet. But
no, I did have to wonder, so on your ship manifest, under cargo, does it say... innumerable slabs of steel just in case people die and you have to bury them.
Captain, why does this entry on the manifest say multiple headstones? Oh, it's technical. Don't worry about it.
Not even that, because in these graves, they dig a hole and there is this giant platform of steel that gets laid on top of the dead person. And they have at least 18 of them. There's one for everybody. It's like, why are you carrying this extra steel? I don't
know. And everyone, they bury every corpse in a giant plastic baggie as well.
I mean, to be fair, that's how you pick up evidence and stuff. I don't have any problem with that. You know, when they start oozing, you don't want them to ooze into the natural habitat.
Right. You don't want them to ooze through the solid steel box.
Well, no, they're in sand. It's just, it's not a box. It's just the lid. Although we then get to see how heavy it is when the super strong vampire things get their way out. But
yes, although you notice they're only super strong for lifting that. They don't seem to be any stronger in a fight.
Well, apparently their powers only work on steel.
Yeah, that's it.
It's something, yeah. I do say, though, that one of the little details, and this is something that often is overlooked in science fiction films that I liked, is if you noticed all of the doors in this movie, all the ship doors, both on the alien vessel and on our cruise vessels, are really, really thick.
Yeah, there's none of this like Star Trek, the doors are an inch thick, or any other spaceships where they look like that they're a shower curtain, which in many cases they were.
Ed.
No, these look like, yes, this is something to keep out a hostile, dangerous environment like, you know, space.
I mean, I will say the design of the ship is a little awkward. It's like, oh, how do we get out? Well, this long tailpipe thing lowers itself, and but at least there's an airlock. I got to give them credit because shuttlecraft on Star Trek never have airlocks, none of them. And their doors are like, as soon as that thing left the shuttle bay, the doors would blow out and Uhura would be spinning around in space and that's the end of the crew. So I actually liked that.
And this is a bit of a, good, there's air here, we can breathe.
Well, there's a space helmet for one of them. Right, because one of one of the guys who's been taken over by the vampire goes running out of the ship, and I don't know what he's trying to do at that point. But then the Captain Marky Mark, I think, puts on Captain Malarkey. I think that's his name.
Said Captain Malarkey. Yep.
He puts on the space bell helmet and goes outside, and wakes up his crew member, slaps him around, wakes him up, and then it's like, okay, let's go back inside. Meanwhile, I guess they were like, well, I guess he didn't die, so we don't need this thing anymore. And quite honestly, we only have one. So, there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. Mm-hmm. But we get to the point where we realize there's a twist.
Yeah.
And the twist is, well, the first twist we actually don't even get first, which is that these are not humans. That's actually the last twist.
Yeah, that's the final twist.
We get a twist where it turns out that at the end of this film, 18 people show up, 3 people leave. We think it's Captain Malarkey and Sanka and Wes. Mm-hmm. And Wes has stayed aboard the ship the whole time to recalibrate
technobabble.
I got to have 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And
you've got 10.
Yeah. So they get on board and take off just before all the crap hits the fan. Yeah. And then we find out that, oh no, they're actually taken over by the vampires. Did you see that coming?
Initially, no. Once, when we see the captain lurking around Wes's quarters with a gun, my first thought is, okay, he got taken over.
I actually liked that.
That was a nice touch. I mean, it was certainly more original than I thought.
Well, in a lot of, I mean, pretty much all films in the 60s that are science fiction, fantasy, that sort of thing, they're supposed to have happy endings. A big spoiler. It's a 60-year-old film. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
This film does not have a happy ending, and that's one of the things.
Bad guys win, in
now,
effect.
The doohickey, what is the Alfred Hitchcock term? The MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin,
is the meteor
deflector
thing. Look out, space rubble.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which apparently is inhibiting the space vampires in some way, because they don't like it. They destroy the one on the other ship. But it turns out that if you leave the atmosphere, literally there's space rubble everywhere. To be fair, this is also true in space. And they need to have a deflector screen so that they don't wreck the ship. So they have stolen it, I guess, because they're going to try and take off in the other ship, except they don't want, I don't know. It's either they're trying to take off with it or they're trying to keep the Argo's crew from taking off without
something
them.
Like that.
But they get it back, and Wes is able to hook it in and get everything going again. But then he finds out, oh no, I'm screwed, and he destroys it. And then Captain Malarkey and Sanka are like, well, we happen to be nearby this planet here, which the other twist, which is Earth.
Mm.
What did you think about that twist?
I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, I was kind of surprised when they said, this is a young, primitive planet. I thought, oh wow, are they going to land on prehistoric Earth? And no, they look in and, oh look, there's New York.
Well, there's a postcard of New York.
There's a postcard of New York, yes.
At least it didn't have giant crickets on it. Yeah.
Yep. And they're all going, look, they still make their buildings out of stone and iron. Ha, 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 puny humans.
Your weapons are useless.
That I thought, again, I could kind of see that coming once they were talking about, yes, it's the third, when they said third planet, okay, you didn't even have to, From the star they call Saul also, apparently.
Yeah, well, I think they wouldn't have, we wouldn't have figured it out. We were too dumb for that.
Yeah.
Or something.
Despite the fact we know they're looking at a globe, our globe, when hovering there in the backdrop.
Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting touch because it hadn't been done to death by then. You know, we hadn't Planet of the Apes or anything.
You did it. You finally did it. Yeah. You.
Darn you all to heck.
And it may be, I haven't really, I mean, I saw the little bits of there where they were talking about the influence on Alien. And then when I thought about it, it's like, oh yeah, you know what? Pitch Dark, Pitch Black. Yeah, kind of. And then I remember Mission to Mars, which if I remember correctly, wasn't that based on a Disneyland ride?
I might've been.
And that one had, that was a horror in space sort of thing too. And it's like, yeah, you know, I hadn't remembered that movie, but I could see that. Maybe this film was a little bit more influential than we thought it was.
Maybe
I don't know. So, but I don't know. Do you have any more notes? Because maybe we should decide whether that influence outweighs the lack of budget.
Well, I do have a thing about here. Let's go to the cabinet and get some plutonium, which are apparently kept in baseball-sized canisters.
With a clock attached.
And each one has 1 pound. Which is nowhere near what you need for critical mass, but whatever.
Well, that's okay, because you really wouldn't want that much blowing up that close to you anyway. No.
And apparently they're designed in easy-to-explode hand grenade form.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But other than that, no, that's all I've got. Why don't we get to it? The finish.
So, Max.
Yes.
It. The Terror it. Beyond Space. No. Planet of the Vampires.
Planet of the Vampires. Those aren't vampires.
Well, that might affect your answer. So, would you recommend this film? What did you think? Did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy it? No. I think it drags a number of places. I don't think it makes any sense. If you are a science fiction completist, because I think you're right, I also can see the influence it had, at least visually, on a number of other movies. If you're a completist, just for the historical aspect, the thing isn't very long. It's 87 minutes. Yeah, check it out if you're a completist. If you want an entertaining film, don't bother.
Yeah.
Because mostly this is just dumb. It is funny at some points. There's a lot you could make fun of. I was wondering why Riff Tracks or Mystery Science Theater never did this, because I think there's a lot of material. You know, I was writing, a lot of my notes were in fact riffs on this. When they're yelling at the ship, emergency, emergency. I wrote, everybody to get from street.
Yeah.
As part of science fiction history, sure. As a movie in and of itself, no. What about you?
Well, I have a soft spot for 60 science fiction films. Okay. I like 60 science fiction films. Even when they're bad, I enjoy them. I'm not even going to say completist. If you have a thing for 60 science fiction films, I would say sure. I don't think it's widely shown. I don't remember it being on Creature Double Feature either. I certainly have never seen it at one of the many science fiction film marathons I've been to, although it may have been in there more than once since then. I haven't been in a long, long time. It is not glacially paced, but it's up there. There's not a lot of action. When it shows up, the blood is, how shall we say, paint. It is paint.
Yeah.
But it does have some interesting elements to it. I do like, even as goofy as those spacesuits are, they're different. They're interesting. The design of the spaceships, even though it makes no sense, because the one thing you want on a spaceship is as much open space as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
Quick, get that control. Okay, it'll take me 2 minutes to walk over there. But I appreciate them taking the effort and the chance into doing something different. I also appreciate the plot points of the fact that, hey, we think they're humans, they're not. Hey, we've got space vampires, which are things that take over other people. We'll see that on Star Trek more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole twist at the end, it's like, hey, they're coming our way, and it's present day for us, and let's see how to put this. We are not prepared. The postscript of this film is not a happy one. I think it's trying. I honestly think it's trying. I don't think the acting is good, but I can't tell because they don't even understand what they're saying to each other.
Yeah.
So in some ways, yeah, you know what? Find a substance, imbibe, inhale, whatever you want. Sit down with your best friend and have a great time with Planet of the Vampires.
Yeah. as being a fun thing.
Yeah, as a serious piece of filmmaking, no, not so much.
No,
I mean, the words Italian science fiction film from the 60s pretty much embrace the entire film. But
yeah,
you know what you should embrace, and that is our poll question.
Nicely done.
Thank you. We would love to know, what is your favorite cinematic plot twist? What unseen element just leapt out of nowhere and smacked you in the face? Please let us know by either emailing us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. Send us a comment on this. You can send us a comment about the show in general. Give us some ideas. We'd love to hear from you. Or if you would like to just go to our website, which is maxmikemovies.com, we have all of our episodes. And as I said, of the regular episodes, this makes 365, which means a new episode every day for a year. Aren't you glad? Leave us a comment. You can talk with our other listeners, like Vince or Cheeseboy shows up sometimes, or other folks. You could also head over to one of the many accounts we have on social media. Those accounts are Mastodon and Blueski and Facebook, and all of them, of course, are Max Mike Movies. Lastly, you can go to a podcast app, which you probably already have. You can listen right from the website if you like. That's another way to do it. Give us a podcast app. We're on it. We don't have any choice. We're just there. And of course, the name of the show, if you have not figured out by now, is Max Mike Movies. Lastly, if you would love to leave a comment like Mystery Date or Doris,
Mystery Date,
you can call us at 617-398-7266. That number again, write it down, 617-398-7266. Leave us a little message. We'd love to play your voice on the air.
We would.
But that brings to an end our little very holiday-specific series.
No, the sunlight! The sunlight!
I want to watch your film, so we're done with the vampires. No more. That's it. So what are we going to do next time, Max? We have a new series and a new movie. You got to tell us what both are. Have to, right now.
Same thing we do every week, Pinky. Try to take over the podcast. Now we are going to be doing a brand new series called 'Cause I Wanna, and you're going to like it. Which is basically just movies we haven't done that we want to do. Movies we've always wanted to do, but they haven't quite fit into any of the other categories. And we just wanna.
Okay.
And we've come up with a bunch.
What do you wanna first?
We're gonna start off with one that is actually a little hard to watch, literally, because I don't believe it's on streaming anywhere except as a purchase.
Okay. Can't even rent it, huh?
No, I don't think you can.
Oh, dear.
There's apparently some sort of, well, anyway, it should be changing because this is the 20th, I believe the 20th anniversary of one of Kevin Smith's best known films, Dogma.
You can't rent Dogma.
Take a look. Maybe you can. I couldn't find it.
You used to not be able to give that movie away.
Yeah, they showed it on Comedy Central constantly.
Sometimes back to back.
But we are going to see this lighthearted little romp through the nature of existence, God, evil, the Catholic Church, and other such delights.
Yeah, you gotta buy it.
Yep. At the moment, I think this is going to change soon. Get yourself your favorite Buddy Christ statue. Grab yourself some doobage and hang out with Jay and Silent Bob and check it out next week with Dogma.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.